What's up, guys? This is Mike.
And this is Leo.
And welcome to the Asian Menswear Podcast, a podcast made specifically to empower, inspire, and motivate the next generation of Asian American men to live their best lives. This is for us.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Asian Menswear Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Korean American chef Chris Cho, based out of Philly, to have a chat with me today. You've probably seen one of his cooking tutorial videos where he shows you how to make Korean dishes and staples. And it's because of these easy to follow and entertaining videos, he's been able to garner a huge social media presence. As of today, Chris has over 1.7 million followers on TikTok, 420,000 fans on Facebook, and another 330,000 followers on Instagram. And today we're just going to learn about Chris and see what he's all about. Welcome, Chris. Thank you again for taking the time out.
Thanks for having me here. Yabusail. We out here, man.
I'm actually surprised because, you know, I normally do a lot of research on my guests prior, but I noticed there weren't any podcasts. So is this your first podcast or?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't like doing interviews too much.
I was like, why is that so weird?
Yeah, I actually been getting reached out a lot these days to do podcasts, but, you know, I just been a little bit careful with what I say, because to be honest, I'm just a little rugged. I've always been such a freely guy, and I feel like recently, while things start popping off, you know, everybody's so sensitive in their opinion. So I just want to respect that. I just want to continue to do what I have to do and, like, you know, make an influence and impact the way I have to. And sometimes it might just come off way like, whoa, that was kind of strong, but that's just how I, you know what I mean?
Right. No, that's exactly what I see from your personality right away. And that's kind of why, you know, like, yeah, I wanted you on here, because you're authentically who you are. You know, you don't really apologize for that. So it's interesting that it's because of that you decided not to do interviews. But even for this podcast, like, if there's anything you want to edit out, like, that's fine too. But thank you for allowing me to interview you, man.
It's amazing. Thanks for having me. I'm excited. Yeah,
I think one thing that I really enjoy about you is just the fact that you kind of show that Asians are different. For me, seeing you with the kind of like the Philly accent was like first for me. And just how you're able to connect with not just Asians, but, like, you have a fan base that's everybody. So at this moment, they see this Asian guy, a Korean guy that they can look up to, who can be a role model and things like that. And I thought, man, I got to get this guy on. And just what you've been able to accomplish and the kind of no quit, work hard mentality, that's just amazing. And I guess with that being said, like, I like to just kind of just start off, like, where does it all start?
Yeah. So before I even get into it, the reason I decided to do it is for exact that reason, because I noticed that your voice out there, like, I see what you're doing. You're really trying to put the Asian culture out there. And I felt like we had similar topics, but you stay in front of people and show that, hey, you know, we're all different. There's people like you, me, you know, everybody's different. And I like how you voice that out. And not even that. You know, a lot of people just message me like, hey, you know, like, I like what you do. And, you know, they probably started following me like 2 weeks ago, you know, but, like, for you, like, you're actually even consistent. Like, hey, and I told you, I'm like, I'll do it. Just right now is not the perfect time. But I actually, I love what you stand up for, because I stand up for that too. Like, you know, we could share a lot of these posts. We'll talk about that later, but we could share about a lot of, you know, what's going on in the world, or we could be about it like today, you know, exactly. Like, and be us, you know. But anyways, so how did I get started? So I came here when I was like 7 or 8. I went to first grade in Korea. I grew up in Korea ever since I was young. My dad came to America before my mom and I did. And I moved up here when I was like first grade. But I went to school in Korea a lot too. I went to school in Korea first, second, third, and sixth grade. We did a lot of going back and forth. So I couldn't speak English. I couldn't speak Korean. I was just kind of a lost child, you know, like, some people say I have a Philly accent, but I actually have like a Philly fob Korean accent. You know, it's kind of like, I'm like everywhere, you know? And yeah, one of the things that I truly love is, you know, I just love Korean food. I eat Korean food 3 times a day, you know? So my friends are like, what? That's crazy. But I mean, the only time I eat non-Korean food is like, when I have to take my wife out to, you know, eat something, you know, for a date, you know, but I'm like a, you know, my palate is so Korean because I grew up in Korea and I just grew up just eating like an old, I eat like an old grandpa, you know? And yeah, my parents always had a restaurant. So I actually worked for them for about good 8 years before I opened up mine. And yeah, I'm just on the internet, just doing what I do in real life. I cook Korean food. I eat Korean food. And I've been repping who I am, and I'm not trying to rep anything that I'm not. You know, I just love being from Philly. I love repping Korean food. And I tell people I'm more like a Philly Korean than a Korean American or Asian American, you know?
Gotcha. And as you research Chef Chris Cho, you start to realize like this guy has this, he's exuding this, like this positivity, optimism, just really like, you're just like grateful for even being alive, so to speak, right? Because you talk about this all the time. You talk about, I'm just happy that I get to be a part of people's lives, the fabric of this community. And I thought, man, this guy, it seems like you can't really ever put Chris Cho down, or he can't ever be in this situation where he's in the negative state. And as I researched more, I learned about kind of like your upbringing, and that wasn't always so. I think you talked about like you're kind of getting into some trouble growing up. And I think I saw a cool interview that someone did. She was a woman that interviewed you. And then you're talking about like you just had this negative mindset. So for you to say that, coming from the guy that I see now, it's like, how did that even go about? Like, what was that all about?
That's why the interviews are crazy. I think about it. I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to watch that. No, but I grew up different. You know, I felt like I always had a different. I feel like being Asian American, we had so many different identity, right? Sometimes we're just born into a, you know, like a Asian family where, you know, being Asian, we never have to be tough, you know? And like, I never had to be tough, you know, till I got to America and I'm like, oh shoot, motherfuckers, we could curse on this. Can I curse on this?
Yeah. I'm like, anything you want,
start man. Calling me Chang. They're like, you know, I'm like, shit got real. And I'm like, oh shit. Okay. So I learned at a young age that, this is so weird. I say this, but every time I got in a fight, it was like gaining extra 10,000 followers on Instagram or something, you know? So I enjoyed it. I embraced it. I'm like, I can't, if they call me a chick, I can't fight back. I can't fight back by the language. I didn't speak the language till I was like fifth, sixth grade, you know? So my thing was, I'm like, damn, every time I punch somebody in their nose for calling me a chick, I become more popular. People are more scared of me. Like I got the social dynamic of it when I was young, and I'm not trying to act like a tough guy or anything, but it's just, that's just how it was, you know? And like, and I enjoy that. And I almost like that young innocent kid became like, start enjoying it. Like when someone called me a ching, it didn't scare me, it excited me. I was like, oh man, it's about to be a show today, let's go. Like, you know, I had nothing to lose, you know? Like, but to be honest, I look back now. When I was young, I thought these stories were cool, but I feel bad for that kid, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, why did I have to be so, why did I have to turn into him from like a little innocent guy who just used to, when I used to take pictures, I used to take pictures like this in Korea, you know? And all of a sudden you start seeing me like change, you know, like it's just growing up in Philly, you just had to be that. And I'm happy that I became that too. But also I feel like, damn, like, you know, I had to change within the environment, but you know, I grew up, and I don't know. I mean, oh man, I double think every time I share this because I go back from Philly to an Asian. But I mean, I dropped out of high school. I was, you know, I don't want to put it out too out there, but I was hustling and I was moving when I was young in high school. You know, like I've always just been, you know, I just always like, and I tell people I'm a hustler before I've ever started. I started my first business when I was like 21, but I tell people that, you know, like, yeah, I'm a hustler. I just do it the legal way now just because I wanted to make my parents proud. Now I'm hustling, you know, like hustling, not in a bad way, but I'm hustling Korean food. And I'm just out here just being me. And yeah, while I'm saying this, I'm thinking 5 million things. I'm like, oh shit, what if the community say something? What if they know about my past? What if my church people What if my mom, you know what I mean? And I'm it's always so hard to be real being Asian in a way, you know?
Yeah. I see what you're saying. And you said, you mentioned you had your first business. What was that business at the time?
So, you know, when we were young growing up, at least for Koreans, all the, I don't know, we call it yangachis, for all the kids who are just like troublemakers, you know, what you do when you drop out of high school, the old heads, you know, do cell phone stores. So that's like my first thing I did. I'm like, I don't want to hustle. I got a couple $1,000. I'm making, you know, I'm like, oh, I want to do that. But that's what all high school dropouts did. We used to work at a cell phone store. You make enough money, you're like, I'm going to have one of these too. And I opened like two of them when I was like 21. And, you know, like that's like the first business I ever got into. I did a lot of different stuff too. When I was 23, I was like really going hard in the real estate scene. And I was known for that too. I made my first like $130,000 on my first check when I was 23. So I touched some money when I was young too. Was kind of arrogant and cocky too, you know, because at 23, what do you expect? But, you know, so like all that humble and a nice guy right now who I am, I'm not, I just call myself humble, but all comes from being the little dickhead or being trying to be tough or, you know, being arrogant and all that, because you just learn from it. You're like, what was all that for? You know, like,
So were you like one of the few? I mean, I don't know how Philly looks, but like, is there a large Asian population there? Or like at least when you were going to school, or were like you're like kind of like the only one?
So when I went to elementary and middle school, it was all white and black. I probably had, I mean, we had a couple Asian homies, but I had like one Filipino homie. I had maybe like one or two Korean friends at school. That was like elementary and middle school when I grew up in Philly. And then that was that. So I didn't really have too many Korean friends growing up. You know, it was either white or black. I had a lot of black friends growing up. You know, I just thought they were like super cool. Learn how to slap box, learn how to play basketball, double ditch, like, you know, dance and all that. I just found it like fascinating. And for some reason, they accepted me a lot better, you know, and like being around them with the core, they always like had my back. I always loved like hip hop growing up too. It wasn't something thought out. I just grew up like that. And yeah, and I actually moved to the suburbs when I was in probably like ninth grade. So I moved to the suburbs. My parents worked hard, moved us to the suburb. But I went to school like 9th, 10th, 11th grade. But I kind of stopped school just being, you know, like I was young. I like money. I like hustling. I like girls. I like that crazy life. Yeah. And I look back and I'm like, damn, my mom got me out of Philly and got me to the suburbs. And I decided
and you went
to
right back.
Yeah. And I did actually did graduate high school, though. I went to a night school. Okay. You know, it's a night school full of, like, you know, everybody's pregnant, everybody's hustling. You know, it's just like it's that type of school.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just, yeah.
It's interesting because I hear the story a lot, kind of like the Asian experience, even for myself. It's a lot of times, especially when your parents are not native to the U.S., so you kind of have to deal with being American and also figuring out the stuff at home. You know what I mean? And I think that creates a lot of like, you know, like you're kind of lost. That's why you were doing all these things because you didn't really have, I don't know, sure if you, did you have an older cousin, older someone that could tell you what was going on in your life? Basically, you know, like that's gone through what you're currently going through.
When I was young, I mean, I had an older sister, but she's like 5 down, you know, like my sister's so 5. She'll be more like, yo, I wish I had some like American friends. I'm like, yo, we live in America. What you mean? So she's like 5 down, 5 down. You know what I mean? Right. Like 5 times with 5. So she only hangs with like Korean speaking friends, but so we grew up so different. But for me, all my best friends, I never had any cousins or anything, but all my best friends were everybody else who just dropped out of different high school and who were like, who looked like me. So when I went to high school, that's when I went to the suburban school when I was like 9th, 10th grade. And there was like 200, 300, I don't know, maybe like 200 Asians. I was like, oh shit. That's when I started like really chilling with Asians. I'm like, this shit is lit, man. You eat rice too. I eat rice too. You know, like, but then I started really hanging with, you know, all my best friends, probably like out of 10, maybe 2 graduated from high school. You know, we all did GED or night school or whatever. But so when parents weren't around, you hang around with, you know, my friends were my family. So I wanted to say that I didn't have cousins. But my best friends were my family growing up. I actually really enjoy hanging with my friends a lot more than my family. And we were just role models to each other and a real bad influence too. But, you know, like that's what you do. You just, you know, you just drop out of school and you'll just hang out, do dumb shit together. And
Yeah.
I love them though. They made me who I am. The character that I have and the confidence I have today is all from them. So shout out to all my, you know, childhood homies. Man.
And during this time, did you have a pretty good relationship with your parents? Just like, you know, you said you were kind of getting in and out of trouble. Was that still like, did that hurt the relationship at all? Or not really?
Man, I don't know, man. I always had a good relationship with my parents kind of,
awesome.
You know, like,
cool.
Like, I mean, even though I was like going into crazy stuff, I mean, my mom would never cry. She did cry, I think once when she was like, man, I still remember, I feel bad, you know, and she's like crying because she got worried, like, damn, I came all the way here and, And she just saw like loss of hope. You know, she was just driving and she's like, damn, what are we going to do with you? But I'm like, man, get me out of this car. You know, but I always had a good relationship with them though. And I always loved them. I always tell people I'm a mama's boy forever. I love my mom. I love my dad. And I always respected that. My dad was never around. He works he's around, but like he works 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm talking 365 days, right? So I never really seen him till I start actually like cooking in the kitchen with him. But not once in my life, I was like, oh, he wasn't there for me. It was like, damn, he's working hard for the family, which my mom, you know, always like, you know, like.
Yeah, that's dope, yeah, man. So basically, even if you're doing all these things, your parents always show love and they always had your back, basically.
Kind of. I mean, my dad just wasn't around. He thought it was going to be cool. You know, I remember like drinking with him when I was in like 12th grade. I was like, yo, dad, I'll be pushing hard out here. And then he was just like, you know, I drank with my dad since I was like young too. And he's just like, oh, just take a shot of soju. And I'm like, I guess you don't believe that I'm really, you know, I don't think they could have imagined because I'm like an extra nice guy around my parents too. I have like split personality, you know, like if you want to be gangster, I'll be gangster with you. You know, if you want to be like, hey, how are you, Chris? I'll be like, hey, you know, like there's like, I have different personalities, you know, like it's not being fake. It's just that, you know, when we go to Asian churches, we become that good Asian boy. And if somebody want to test you at the club, you become that guy too, you know?
It's funny because I can kind of, just from all my research, I could tell you could switch it just from your personality and how you speak and how you move. And that kind of leads me, because I know you just said like your mom, like one time she was crying just about like feeling hopeless or whatever. And and they talk about like the restaurant industry, right? Your dad having to work so hard and to kind of give you that better life. And then you just basically decided, I'm going to jump into this. Like, you know what I mean? Kind of going the opposite. I guess from what I saw was like your parents didn't want you to do what they were doing, right? And at the time, you were pretty successful. I mean, you had your real estate thing. You had a team of 15 people. I mean, you're making like 100 grand off deals. I mean, pretty young age too. And then you decided, I think your mom asked you, hey, can you help out while she was like away? And then from then on, you just decided, hey, I'm gonna work 12 hours a day, every day for $400. I mean, that like, why? Like, you know what I mean? I'm trying to figure out where's your mind at and why you decided to do that. Like, can you talk to me about that?
That's crazy. You know these stories. Like, that's crazy.
I had to research, man. Thank you. Gave me your time. I gotta make sure I know who you are.
Yeah. So I did have a like internet marketing company when I was like 25 too. I lived in like Philippines and Thailand, and I had an office there. You know, I built a business out there. That's what I was mainly doing. But you know, one day, you know, my mom was like, you know, she always worked at the restaurant, you know, and then she's like, hey, can you help out? Because I have to go to Korea and your dad's giving me shit for it. And I'm like, all right, you know, like, and I'm like, why can't we just hire somebody? But it doesn't work that way. Like the guilt of my mom going to Korea, like shout out to my mom. She goes to Korea all the time now. And then that was my, you know, like I start helping her out. And then, you know, like one day while I was helping out, my dad, like he had like a mini, it wasn't a stroke. He just, for some reason he went to the ER and he couldn't really like, he was just there for a couple of days. And then we, you know, we looked around. I was like, damn, what happens if this happens? And I had to realistically think, I'm like, all right, what I do is cool, but is it going to feed the whole family and carry it on? Cause my dad is actually like, he carries the family, not just the family. He carries like most of the family in Korea. Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't have any rich family, you know, like everyone in my family in Korea probably makes less than like 25,000-30,000 a year. Everybody has trouble. So my dad really carries my mom's side, my dad's side, you know what I mean? Like, so I had to look, I'm like, damn, what happens if this happens? So, more than all that death, I just felt like, what can I help him? Cause I used to just serve in the front. I'm like, what can I do to help him in the kitchen? So I started chopping up some onions and, you know, start helping out a little bit, but it like fit me. I never thought I would want it to cook, to be honest, but I see this corny joke. It's like King Arthur when he grabbed the sword, right? For me, when I grabbed that knife, it was like, oh shit, this shit is fun, you know, like, and I was just going in. And being in an Asian restaurant, it was hard. I think a lot of people could relate working for Asian parents or Asian company. The minimum years of the time that our staff worked at the restaurant was 7 to 15 years. So when I got in there, I was like the newbie. So, you know, I was always like, yes, I'll do, you know, like, So I just being competitive, being in the kitchen, I'm like, man, they're always just, everybody's in the kitchen. They treat you like you're a nobody. You know, it doesn't matter if my dad's son, I'm like, dad, how can I do this? He's like, yo, learn from him. You're not in my state. Like, you know, like he just raised me kind of tough. And I'm like, all right, I see you. And I was always like trying to come up. But anyways, like I wouldn't want my kids to be in a kitchen too. And I only understand it now because like I run two restaurants and I'm just like, damn, like it's a really hard business. And that's a life full of anxiety. It's a business where you just continue. You have to serve the community, which I love too, but it comes with a lot of problem, a lot of anxiety. Yeah. And talking about like, you know, all these things that's happening, Asians getting attacked. Like we're in the hood, you know, like our, I think average income around our restaurant is like 25, 30. I don't know. It's just something low or the whole house, you know, the whole household income around there. But I mean, we're in the hood. We're good with the community and everything. But yeah, sorry. I think I just started.
No, you're good. You're good. Did you cook before that? I mean, did you enjoy cooking just at home or like not really at all?
I mean, I always grew up like watching my parents cook, or I always grew up in the kitchen as in like, I don't know, like it just, cause we're always home. If I'm not home, I will go to the restaurant and my mom's always making kimchi. So I'm like, she's like, here's a bag of potato. I'm always like, you know, like peeling potatoes. I never even thought I was cooking. This is just what I did, you know, or like I knew just how to make all the basic dishes because I just see my mom always make it. I'm always in the kitchen with my dad. And to be honest with you, this is like the realest thing. And it's weird for me when people want to glorify chef and stuff. But growing up Asians, us Asians don't ever look at chefs like they were like superstars. That's a recent thing. It's like, don't do that, man. That's hard work, you know, or like, yeah, you just have to work 12 hours a day to feed the family, you know? And every single person in the kitchen, all the chefs and the cooks told me like, oh, get out the kitchen. Don't do it. You know, like, and it wasn't a super cool thing. I never was like thinking like, wow, my dad's so cool. Or like, my dad comes home smelling like, you know, like cooking 12 hours a day, all that kaivi and frugogi, you know what I mean? Like making kimchi, you come home like, you know, it's not like when my dad comes home, like it's smelling like after drinking soju and all the food. I'm like, damn, bro, go take, you know, he always would jump in the shower first, you know, like
that's crazy.
I think on the TV, they make it look super cool, you know, but yeah. it's a crazy grind. You know, I think you got to be kind of pretty crazy to be in the kitchen 12 hours a day.
Right. I mean, that you literally said that you just fell in love with it, right? I'm assuming the love and the passion for cooking that you kind of learned and then you trying to kind of help the family business. This is the reason why you've been grinding it out for I don't know how many years now. Is that what it is?
I love, like, I don't know. It was, so when I joined my parents' restaurant, I was the first person who spoke English at the whole restaurant. You know, like, so, you know, it was just fun introducing the food to people. They're like, oh my God, I've been coming here for like 10 years. Finally, someone who speaks English. I'm like, oh. They're like, what would you recommend? You know, like, before they came in, it was like, what would you recommend? You know, our service would be like, oh, the most expensive one. You know what I mean? Like, and I just started having fun introducing our food and our culture. I'm like, oh, what do you like? Do you like pork? Do you like seafood? Do you like beef? And I started building this relationship with the customer. That was fun. It was like fun, like in the, learning in the kitchen, managing the host, like, you know, growing our business and their staff and like really serving the community. It became a spot where like in Philly, like, cause our restaurant was like more like people who were like 40 to 60. It was like real authentic. So actually someone just said this on Clubhouse. They're like, what do you think about you doing things online? Do people ever judge you? Like, I'm like, yeah, I do this shit in real life. What you see online is just like, authentic stuff in real life. So I don't need to prove anyone. They want to come to the kitchen. I could show them what's up, you know, but anyways, it's fun, you know, like, and my goal was to actually serve the elders before this whole TikTok thing. And I was committed to that. So we actually serve a lot of the elders around 60 to 70. We even go to those elderly house and serve about 130 to 150 people every day. I like breakfast and lunch. And I really love, I told my dad, I'm like, I want to be able to cook for the elders right now. because this might be my last chance to cook the most authentic food to the most authentic like immigrants. And then I could cook for someone like you and me or our kids in the future. Yeah. But in about 15, 20 years now, I won't even be able to serve the community who actually came to America, who missed their home, you know, the authentic dish. And I felt like it was my duty to, at least in Philadelphia, because, man, these guys work, you know, like our elders, Asian elders, they work so hard in this world. And, you know, they can't speak the language, you know, like, and at least they get to, they should eat what they, you know, they miss in Korea. But even in my restaurant still, I tell them, pick up the phone and say, like, in Korean, 여보세요. Or like, oh, 안녕하세요, 사랑합니다. Yeah, they're like, why? I'm like, because if there's three elders who just call, I want them to, this is weird and deep, right? I'm going into like my restaurant mode now, but it's like when someone like your parents or my parents called their restaurant and they work so hard, like immigrated here to make us successful, and they have to call their own culture restaurant and they can't speak the language. If someone pick up like, hey, how are you? How can I help you? I want someone on the other line like us to be like, hey, like in Korean, like, 안녕하세요, 감사합니다, 사랑합니다. So they could be like, oh, this is what I want to order. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Like for me, it always became that deep, you know. It was like, and I'm just like really serving the community online now on TikTok or Instagram or YouTube now. But it's what I do, you know. Like I just appreciate anybody who loves Korean food and their culture, and I want to introduce it as much as I want.
That's crazy because that's another reason why I think a spotlight for you was like important, because I think you're introducing, because you know we hear these stories all the time. There's a lot of Asian Americans or just Asians that are here in America where they're kind of, they bring their homeland's food to school and then they're embarrassed about it, right? And I think the way that you're kind of introducing Korean food where it's like digestible and it's fun and it's easy for people who probably never had Korean food, like, whoa, I kind of want to try that. And I think that's huge because we didn't have that before, because Korean food was, or Vietnamese food or Chinese food was like foreign. But now with social media, like, look, that's what I'm saying. Now what you're doing is you're opening the door to everyone to make Korean food like this dope thing to eat and try. And I think I was like, the way you're doing it and showing culture was great, man. I thought that's why like you're a good representative of that. Like, I guess another note is, I know your restaurant, you guys serve out like 400 to 500 of the, I don't know what dish it is, but it's for like Korean Day.
Oh yeah, dokgu, like for Lunar New Year's. Yeah,
that's,
it's dope, like rice cake soup. Yeah.
So your family business is very much so about the community, and it's amazing to see that, man.
See, I love that, right? I was telling my wife, I'm like, man, I posted a video from like 3-4 years ago, and I'm like, man, people don't understand. I have more passion than, like, I wasn't afraid to hire someone for 500 just to shoot it, just to show it to the world that, yo, in Philly, this is what happens. I had like 500 subscribers. I didn't care. No, because most people say, oh, when I get to 10,000 followers, I'm going to start YouTube. I'm like, yo, start where you're at, man. If 200 people are following, learn to impact the 200 people to get to 2,000. If you don't know how to entertain 10,000 people, you're not going to be able to entertain 100,000 people.
Yeah.
Even right now, I like, it's great that I blew up. I'm just same principle.
Right.
Still coming back to every single person. And when I'm at like millions, people are going to be like, oh, wow, like it's like, yo, it's simple. If you can't reply back to, if you don't think your shit is popping enough at 1,000 followers, you don't give a fuck about the people anyway. And I'm not trying to hate on people, right? But I'm like, what makes a difference? What you think when you get to 10,000 followers from 1,000 followers, you all of a sudden gonna care about your community and your people and your voice?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but even me, when I watch it back, I'm like, oh shit, I was into that shit. And honestly, it makes me feel good. I'm like, damn, I finally get to do what I do in a, you know, like on the internet now. It might be a little bit, to certain people, it might be cheesy or too easy, not authentic enough, because I make it really easy for it. Because I do make the dishes easier. And sometimes
like a simplified
easier,
version?
Yeah, simplify, you know, like, but, you know, like, actually, I want to get into that too. So in 2020, the biggest reason I like things like really took off is not just because I was sharing Asian recipe or Korean recipe, but I made a simplify. So when there was a time literally last year, people were terrified to go to supermarket, so I had to make all these recipes even easier to cook with something at home, like ramen fried rice. I don't cook ramen fried rice for my wife or myself, but you know, it's like fun. I'm like, you got ramen at home? You got rice at home? I know you got soy sauce and sesame home, right? So I got to create dishes that they could actually make at home. And that's like the second thing, but even deeper than that, while everybody was going through anxiety, panic attack, depression, I was delivering happiness through the video. So that's like my, I'm wow. conscious of it, but I don't have to speak about it, you know, but it's just that I know, because so many people are like, I had to realize it because everybody's like, oh my God, chef, your videos make me happy. And I'm like, oh shit, even though I feel like shit right now, let's keep going. And I really felt like, honestly, I was like sad, anxiety, depressed and all that too last year too with everything going on. But I was like, yeah. man, maybe this is my calling. If I could make 200 people happy off this, I'm okay to go through this today. And then just kept going on. I'm glad I did. You know, sometimes you need to dance with your anxiety to, you know, get through the other side.
Wow. That's crazy that you thought that deep into your videos. And I mean, that's the reason why those videos have taken off. I mean, you kind of knew what the people wanted or what they needed.
Yeah.
Amazing, man. And back to how you were talking about, like, no matter what, you're still producing content regardless of the amount of views that you're receiving. And you kept it real. Cause I mean, this isn't a overnight success overnight. Oh, I get 1.7 million TikTok followers. This is something that you've been building for, like, I think it dates back to like 4, 5, 6 years. Yeah. That you've been doing content.
TikTok happened in like 1 year, which was dope. I'm like, oh, yeah. shoot.
But it's like building up to that, like, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was all the
like past. You had to be in position to get there yeah. and then have the thought of, okay, this is what people like. It's because of all the stuff that you've been doing in the past. I don't think people realize that.
I stutter too, bro. Like, you can ask my man, JL Jupiter. So when he used to shoot my videos and I used to do voiceover, sometimes I would go home because I'm like, yo, I just can't do it. Like, I get so much anxiety trying to read it. That's just not me, you know? So I had to figure all this thing out. I'm just really good at shooting videos by myself on my iPhone. If anybody else shooting it, I don't feel uncomfortable, you know? Like, even like interviews like this, I know when I'm on it. You ever watch David Choi interview with Joe Rogan? No?
David Choi?
Is it David Choi? Not David Chang, David Choi. It's like the guy who did graffiti for Facebook and made millions. An artist, but anyway,
yeah,
like,
they're friends though.
Yeah, right? I think he talked about like how he threw up going to Joe Rogan's show. Like, even for me, I get so much anxiety before I jump on these, but I know when I'm on it, I enjoy it. Do you know what I mean?
But hey, like, hey, same with me, man. I don't like doing this either, but because I know this is gonna help what I'm doing, I have to put myself out there to move it forward. So for me, I mean, I'm a little comfortable now, but before, bro, I was man, I would be shaky. And it's not even about the person. It's just the fact that I'm having this conversation. So
that's
100%
dope, man.
Feel you, bro. 100% feel you on that.
I respect you for that, for real. Because I know this. I think a lot of people just love to judge content creators, but they don't know what kind of struggle or what people have to go through. You know, like, you just have to face anxiety every day. Like, I mean, sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's not, but it's life. You know, like, you're going to be criticized. But the bigger you get, people are going to be talking ish. Like, to be honest, before I used to be like, you could look at any of my content a year ago, I used to just go at people. I'm like, oh, fuck you, pussy, pull up, I fuck you up. You know, but I realized so many kids are watching now and I care about that, right? I used to say, I don't care how much I get paid. I ain't stop cursing for nobody, man. I'm me. And that's like my insecurity. I don't want to change for nobody, you know, but once I realized that so many babies are watching and people are like, hey, you know, my baby just love to watch her. And they show me videos of them going like, ooh. Another one. Damn. They're like, I can't give the phone to the kids anymore. And I was like, damn, am I being selfish, being stubborn, trying to keep it real? You know, like, and another thing I want to actually address about the cooking thing is you mentioned that I just do like Asian food fast. And it's like, we're like, you know, like, I see a lot of more Asian kids who look like us who are making recipes. Right. So, you know, people would copy and paste. Yo, he's trying to be like you. I'm not in that energy. I look at it like if I could influence even one or two other Cambodian, Vietnamese, Filipino, or doesn't even have to be Asian, but they're like, or from Philly or from California. If they're like, yo, this guy's doing it, maybe I could do it. If I could give that inspiration and they start it. And when, you know, sometimes people are like, yo, he's trying to be like, I'm like, good. God damn it. Good. If there's 100 of them, I might not have to do this anymore too. But it's just, I love it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like even you, like this podcast, think about how many people get inspired by what you do and start it And that's also the reason we have to still do it with the anxiety and pull it through.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We have to think bigger than ourselves. And that's why I look at it. It's like, it's beyond me. You know what I mean? So I think that we're very similar in understanding of what we're trying to do here. Mm. And again, it is like, I think for the Asian community, things always been kind of like just us, you know what I mean? But for me, what I'm trying to do is get Asian guys out there for everybody. You know what I mean? Like to affect, to be role models for a black kid or a white kid. You know what I mean? Not just an Asian kid, just like to make it normalized for an Asian person to be a role model for anyone, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To be an MJ, to be, you know what I mean? And that's kind of like, and that's the reason, another reason why I like that I have you on.
Kind of like not low just key, we became like the new Jackie Chan, or not at their scale, but we're like the new Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, except in our own voice that white people, black people, Asian people, like everybody loves them, you know? And we don't have to be the doctor, the lawyer, or in the movies when they're like, you know, like that role when they're like people trying to rob us, you know, beauty supply. They're like, Bani Naga, get out. And people are just laughing in a movie. Like we don't have to, you know, like I'm very cautious of that.
But we'll jump into something a little bit more positive, man. And what I want to start with is ever since you started your career just in the food industry, a lot of things have happened, man. And what's a number one highlight for you that's happened ever since you started? You picked up the cooking tool, and then you felt like this is it. Well, what's a highlight? What's something that stands out to you? Like, damn, this is amazing that this happened.
I think the biggest thing about cooking is that I think people find cooking very fascinating. Like, it's like, wow, you have a superpower, you know? But through that, I love the voice and the impact I could have, you know? Like, it's a weird world, you know? I've been doing the same thing when I had 3,000 followers, 5,000 followers. At least in the community, I was known for what I, you know, like, in my city, you know? But I feel like, talk about more than, I guess, picking up the knife, just being able to cook and being someone online. I love the fact that we can be a voice, you know, like rather it could be sharing violence or it could be sharing like just kids feeling like, oh my God, I have someone like to, you know, like I want to be like him. I want to be like Mike. I want to be like Chris, you know? So I think the impact is like we actually have a stronger or louder voice that I could put out. That's like the biggest thing. And I get to introduce our food. Like it could be just someone coming into the restaurant who never had kimchi. Like, hey, I had kimchi for the first time. And I can't wait till our kids go to school with some spring roll, egg rolls and like kimchi.
Or they offer that in the cafeteria versus just hamburgers. And it's because it's American.
They look at it like, damn, dog, you eating peanut butter and jelly? You know, like.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. But anything happened like, besides just the cooking itself, like anything, I guess maybe even when was your first big video that really just took off, like went viral, like you weren't used to this sort of publicity. Do you remember anything like that? Like, oh, damn, I got a million views or like I got like overnight, it just went. Anything like that that stood out to you? Take your time, man. I'm sure you got a lot of those situations.
I don't know if it was a one thing, but I just keep simplifying. I think some of the ramen videos did well. Fried rice video. Like fried rice is so simple, but also realize a lot of people don't know how to make simple fried rice, you know? Like that was lit.
I saw they got recognized by Korea too. Was that a pretty big highlight as
well?
That's crazy.
Actually, being able to get sponsored from people like H-Mart or like Shinramyeon is dope because that's what my parents are like. They don't care about if I'm on anything. On the government of war, that was actually big because I felt like, damn, I wasn't even doing it for that. Do you know what I mean? Like the fact that my country, Korea, my other country like awarded me and seen it, I was like, oh shit, maybe I am doing something. But the fact that my parents don't care if I'm on New York Times, man, they care if I get a deal from HMO or like Shinramyon, and they're like, hey, my son get paid from the ramen company, you know, like, or like, he got the award from the, you know, like it's the things that makes my parent, you know, happy is like what gets me going, you know, like,
That must have been amazing. How was it? What was the first? What was the first big deal that you know that they knew what company that was or like what brand that was? I mean, when you told them, what was their reaction?
But their reactions, they're like maybe like the Shinamyun or the H-Mart stuff, because like we like get all of our food from H-Mart get delivered, you know. So like
yeah.
But they never. My parents are the type who never show like, you know. I know they love me. They're happy for me, proud of me. But they'll just be like, But they will go to their friends and be like, you know, like whatever around their friends. They're like, yo, I heard about this. I heard about that. I'm like, how do you know all this? Like, oh, your parents won't shut the fuck up about you. You know, but like in front of me, they'll just be like,
okay. That's so weird, man. I wonder why Asian parents are always like that. And even you mentioned this, your dad will like send the videos out, but like he doesn't know how to mass send it. So he'll do it individually. Yeah. And like that's love. You know what I mean?
200 people. Yo.
That's crazy. That's a lot of like time.
On Kakao, which is like a text mess platform in Korea, but he just sends it like one copy, one by one by one by one. And it's like, but I know it, you know, like, but also I like, this is a deeper Asian conversation, but it's like, not even an Asian thing, right? Some parents, some culture, we don't tell our kids they love them, you know? But fortunately enough, we grew up in America where we learned to give hugs and say, I love you and all that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just grateful that I learned that by living in America. And I feel like as an adult, we need to teach our parents how to love instead of blaming them at an age we're at, like they didn't say they love me. Like it's like that's old, man. We're an adult and we're responsible to teach them now because they came from a whole country that no one taught them how to shit, you know, completely like hugging. You know, like we out here hugging all of our friends. True. And we look at our parents and be like, oh, they never taught us. It's like, what the hell? If you learn how to hug, give that hug over there, you know, like it's like a mind shit. You know, we gotta change how we think about it. You know, they're like little kids who don't know how to say I love you. I for the first time heard my parents say I love you when I was like 23. I went to this some seminar and I was like, yo, I went to the kitchen. I was like, yo, I love y'all. And then they're like, And I said, no, I ain't leaving here till y'all say it back. They're like, I love you. And I'm just like, yeah, that's right. You know, like,
holy shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
But also it's like, we just have to, I think we get it. Some people grow up real resentful that our parents don't show us the love and appreciation. And like, they're like, oh my God, I'm so happy for you, son. You know, like, but we also like, some of us also understand that, yo, they're really happy for us. They're shy. They just don't know how to express it.
They do it in different ways, man, by feeding you. Yeah. That's what I learned.
Yeah.
I've accepted it because for my parents for the longest time, because you're a kid, so you don't understand. Like, again, we're in that middle identity trying to figure this out. But you have to understand how they show you love is through feeding you, to making sure like you got, I don't know, like if you're cold, you got a blanket, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. And then you have to think, this is how they grew up. So they're still showing you love. It's just in a different way. And I had to learn that way later. And then now it's okay. Cause I understand they are showing me love. It's just not what I'm used to or what I, from the American culture. You know what I mean?
That's deep, bro. If that's not love, what is? Like cooking you hot, nice.
Yeah.
Food,
or like, you know, like you'll be like, you'll say, oh man, I want some of this. And then next thing you know, it just magically it pops up and they make it. But that's literally them saying, I love you and hugging you. Cause that's thoughtful as hell to do that. So so something
that's probably the reason a lot of Asian Americans, a lot of us don't know how to cook too, because you just sit at the table and then shit's there. You're like, oh,
but they tell you to eat. You know? Oh, you're full. No, eat some more. Like, I think that's basically saying, I love you some more. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what I learned. Do you have any other highlights, man? Any people reach out to you? Anything like you're like, whoa, like I'm sure by now nothing really surprises you now, but anything you're like, damn.
No, I'm always, who I actually thought was dope was Black Dog from Philly, you know? And it was like, that was like a huge thing. But you know what's weird? I don't be watching. I'm not on social media. I don't be watching. But actually, I'm sure there is. I just can't think of it on top of my head. Oh, big shout out to Chef Roy Choi. He just recently hit me up. Like,
who's that?
Chef Roy Choi.
Oh, Roy Choi from LA. I'm a huge fan of him.
He's a big pioneer. And I just told him, I was like, man, thank you for doing what you do. Because like I met him like maybe 3 years ago. And when I was in LA, one of my friends was like, hey, this is, you know, it's like my friend's like a rapper and he writes for like Blackpink. And he's like, hey, can you sit down with my homie? He's in LA. And I didn't even know Roy Choi then. And he didn't know me. And he just sat down with me for an hour, gave me a time and just fed me and just, you know, just talk, you know, like talk to me. And I was just like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I think he was a little bit more introvert. So I felt like, man, maybe he don't like me, you know, because I'm like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But recently he just hit me up. He's like, yo, you should make this, you should try this. And I was like, man, I was so inspired by him when I was in LA, because I think he had a club called Line Hotel there. And I think there was a club around there. And then I remember just seeing so many Asian people in there. And I don't know, I was just inspired. And I just went home, started writing notes. I'm like, how can I recreate this community in Philly? And I started like going in. I think a little different. And I want to share that too. I think getting inspiration and taking pictures with celebrities are dope. But when you're inspired, I think people need to really, instead of taking pictures, I think people need to pick people's mind and try to like
while you're there,
create a blueprint. Like there was a time, you know, LA is different, man. Like I remember just chilling at a bar with a friend, and it's like there was like Far East Movement there. There's Awkwafina there, Dumbfounded there. Every videographer you can, you know, it's just like, and I'm just in there, and I promise you, I was getting drunk, and it was weird because I like. My friend knew all of them, and I was just kind of like just chilling. And like, you know, and they're like, yo, he's a chef from Philly. No one gives a fuck about a chef from Philly, you know, or back, you know, like that. But I'm just like, oh, this is cool. And I felt like, eh. But I was like half drunk, and I took the Uber back to my friend's crib, and I started jotting down this energy. I was like, damn, how come in Philly we don't have Asian influencers like that? How come when I was growing up, we didn't have a videographer that we could look up to? We didn't have a chef to look up to, actor, rapper. And then I was like, all right, let's bring this energy back to Philly. And instead of keep trying to leave Philly, and a lot of the talent leave their city, I'm like, how can I build this up in my city? And that's why even now to this day, if you see all my videos, I'm screaming Philly heavy, because you know, I love New York, I love LA, but it's like a little hometown underdog story. I want everybody who feel like they don't have the connection in New York, LA, or they don't have, you know, like I want them to think like, yo, you could create it at your own city. And even right now, I'm so much happier I'm doing this from Philly rather than I made it happen in LA, because it makes more kids feel like, oh shit, maybe I could do it where I'm at. And the only reason I really share about, like, I'm a high school dropout. I don't even like talking about all that no more, because I'm in a whole different lane. But it's like, I'm in a different energy. I don't want to be that guy. I left that guy over there, and but anyway, like, I just say that just because I want to inspire the kids who feel like no one believes in them. Especially when you drop out of high school, everybody in the world think you're a failure. You know, you're not meant for anything. So like, yeah, if somebody's watching this, you dropped out of high school or college, or if you were a hustler, or if you were, you know, stuck somewhere and you're not in LA, you're not in New York, you're Asian, whatever these things that you guys might think, it's an excuse or it's a flaw. Like, that's your superpower, fam. Because for me, when people told me I shouldn't talk like this as a chef, when people say like, I'm Asian, so I have to go to a French culinary school just to, because everybody asks what culinary school you went to, like all that. But anyway, at the end of the day, I became the person that people said, don't be like, you know, you're Asian, you talk like this, you're a high school dropout. I own that. And I want to inspire people with all my flaws. And if you guys like me for the flaws, I appreciate you. And, you know, I just want to inspire people that way.
Damn, man. Normally I ask a question to kind of end things off. And I think you pretty much just answered it, but what's the one piece of advice you would tell someone? Let's say you're on your deathbed, right? And you got one line left, a couple of lines left to tell someone that's up and coming. And it's something that no matter what they end up doing, you can apply it. And this is going to give them the best advice possible before you head out of here. You know, what's that one thing? Take your time, man.
Yeah. Well, this is a sign that recently that my mind shifted for, but be loyal, be good hearted, like be good to your people and be loyal to your people. But also, you don't have to feel guilty to continuously be loyal to the people you don't have to be. And to me, that was like huge, because I always feel like I need to be loyal to everybody who was there when I was so young, But, you know, like, be loyal to what people who really care about you, who love you. And I'm talking about your mom, your dad, your wife, and that few friends. You don't have to satisfy everyone and try to be loyal to everyone. I'm still learning to fight that right now. And it's advice for me. And I continue to tell myself, I'm like, you don't have to satisfy everyone and be loyal to everyone. But also that's gonna stop you from being a real good person and a real good loyal person to the people who really need you and that you love. So be careful who you're loyal to and be very loyal and good to the people who really matter. One more thing. That's just what I'm going through right now. But this is one thing I always say, like, this is my favorite message that I have for the world is, don't let anybody steal your dream. Don't let anybody rob you for your dreams. You know, everybody around you is going to tell you, you can't do it. You ain't shit. You're not meant for it. And it could be your parents. It could be your best friends. They could tell you your podcast idea is stupid. An Asian Korean guy cooking Korean food online, stupid. Man, the second you wake up, the world's going to start attacking you and tell you your ideas suck and you're not meant for anything. But really zone into who you are and don't let anyone, I don't care who it is in your family, your mom, your dad, I don't care who it is. Don't ever give up and don't let anybody steal your dream and just continue that, you know? Yeah. Don't let anybody steal your dreams, man.
It's perfect, man. You represent that. And I think that's why it's important for you to tell your story more often. And I don't know if this happened with you, but like even for myself, like I always felt like telling your story is almost like you're boasting in a way, or like you're showing off. Mm. But I learned like it's not that. It's the other reason people tell the story is because you want to reach someone so they can, because your story might resonate with them. So as much as you feel like, oh, I might be boasting or like I might be trying to show off, but it's not that. Your reason for doing it is to share your story. So someone might be like, damn, that's me. This is how he did it. So that's what I'm learning now today to be able to talk more about the stories and make sure this is the reason why I want your story to be out there, because it's important, man. And
and that's what I mean about like trying to satisfy everyone and try to be loyal to everyone is, man, the people who we feel there's a guilt around us, because when we're younger, if we felt like we're doing anything different, it's like, why are you showing off? You know, like I had a friend just tell me the other day, like, yo, I don't mean to show off, but I'm doing well in this, you know, stock or whatever. And I said, yo, you don't even have to worry about that. Like, if I'm talking to you, I wish you could tell me all your wins, because I'm here and the energy where I'm like, what? What's the next move? That's what you're doing. Yeah. But it's just that we still want to satisfy the people who are going to think we're bragging. You know, like, I don't want to worry about that energy. That's
right,
what I meant.
Shouldn't.
Like,
right. Right.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I love them, but also fuck them, because those are the people that I have to wake up every day and question myself and meet more people who you will meet. And we don't have, you know, when you meet people who are winning, they just share their wins. We don't start with the conversation with, like, if I'm getting on a call with you, I'm getting on a call to hear what you've been doing and what you've been winning for. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, but sometimes we have this guilt, especially around childhood friends that we feel like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Don't want to bring up stuff because it might rub them the wrong way. But I think,
keep doing you, brother. I think your shit is dope. Like, I want to actually talk to you after we end this.
Okay. Yeah. And then last question, man. Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? I don't know how far you plan out. Some people plan like their 5-year plan, 10-year plan. Mm. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, man? What's the goal? What is the dream of where this is headed? Honestly, I could see you doing a freaking show. I mean, like a chef, Chris Cho, just going around, like, cause you had that. Cause I seen the vlogs that you did in San Francisco. It's entertaining. Like you're talking about teaching about the Korean thing. I was like, that's dope. But I could just see you doing that. But I mean, I don't know.
Isn't that crazy? I did all that like way back.
You,
I had like 3,000 followers and I used to have a videographer following me. I just wanted to do it. So imagine
dope,
if I started
now, which is going to be. When I saw it, I was like, and you know, that was back in the day too. So I was already kind of hooked in because you did one in San Francisco. So this is where I'm from.
Yeah.
So then I was like learning about like that, you know, we don't really have a Korean town, but it's kind of in Japan. So see, that's like, it was interesting to me.
I'm excited to do all this. Like, so that is my goal, right? Much as I want to do food, I actually enjoy checking out restaurants. Like cooking, making video, that's a lot of work, you know, but also with all the all the support that I get now, I want to go to like San Francisco and meet with people like you. Now I have like people who are interesting. Before I'm just like in other people's city.
It's just
like,
you.
Yeah, where we going, man? You know, like, and I
right,
got like,
now you have a network.
Pulling up with a, yeah. It's yeah. like everybody's just pulling up with a blunt. I'm like, yo, why we called him, man? I thought we going to go eat, you know, like, but, but now it's like, I think it'll be so interesting because over the time I practice so much on the camera, I also been practicing my message. And also been practicing just little skills and just, so I'm into all the network. I'm so excited to try that. But yeah, 5 years ago, I don't, you know, to be honest, I just worry about like today and tomorrow's tasks, right? And
yeah,
to be honest with you, in 5 years, I might not be in the media. Like much as I love doing this online, I really realize I'm a huge like introvert through the pandemic. And I just want to do what I feel like doing at this moment. And I want to make the most impact and influence as possible. Not as in like an egotistic, like, yo, I got power, so I want to influence people. At this point right now, I can make I feel like I am impacting and influencing certain people's lives. And I want to take it as far as I can with that. And when it's time, maybe it's not going to be my time one of these days. Maybe it is, but I'm not really holding on to it, you know? But more I could talk to people like you or more recipes I could make right now, I just want to take it as far as I can. And I don't know, I might be doing it 5 years later in a whole nother level where I might not be doing it at all, you know, but I don't know, you know, sometimes I'm not planning to do this forever or I'm not planning to give up either or quit either. I don't have I'm okay without it. At the end of the day, because I also got to think about crazy stuff. Like, what if there's a controversy? Where is this? I did a lot of crazy things in my life, you know? But in 5 years, all I know is that I'm going to be, loyal to, I just want to make sure I take care of my wife, take care of my family, take care of my good friends and my team. That's the only, like, real tangible goal that I have in the 5 year and just be a good person. And when I look back 5 years from now, to be like, it's just like the videos that we're talking about, like, oh, I'm glad I did that at that moment. Because, when I shot that video, it was like, I was cool with 500 people watching it, that was the goal. And I didn't do it because I wanted anything out of it. But I just want to focus on my energy with you today and tomorrow's schedule and just see where it's at. But so I don't have a crazy goal. And I think that's what gets me. So every day I get happy when I get reached out. I'm like, oh, shit, you want to do something? Okay. So I'm still,
That's amazing, man. I think as long as you're impacting people, wherever that's going to take you, I feel like that's where you're headed. You know what I mean? So it's like you're going to adjust wherever that leads you. But it's amazing that you have a platform. I think you're the right person to have a platform because, a lot of people have platforms, but they don't necessarily are the right people or like mature enough or like they're there in their minds yet to kind of have that power. But I think... Mm-hmm. Where you're at, I think it's good. And so where can people find you, Chris? Your Instagram is Chef Chris Cho, basically, right?
I think Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. I think everything's Chef Chris Cho. Yeah, everything is Chef Chris Cho.
Dope.
Yeah.
And then other than that, man, I appreciate the conversation. I think I definitely learned way more about you than the research that I've done. I think it's a lot deeper. So that was a rewarding conversation, man. I think we have very similar goals on what we're trying to do and trying to keep the positivity, all that good stuff. And thank you, man. Appreciate it, Chris.
Yeah, I appreciate you for having me on this platform too, fam. And I just getting on this interview today, I realized what you're really up to. And like, I like it in a deeper sense. And I wish you could continue. Don't let anybody rob you for your dream, man. This is crazy. And I really feel like we need a platform like this where a lot of agents could, rather it's agents or not, like we said, got to look at it bigger too, but
bigger picture.
We're a voice and I appreciate you that you get to have me on this, on your platform. And I really appreciate your time, your energy for making this happen. Thank
you. Appreciate it, Chris. Yeah, no problem, man. Until next time, that's the reason why I do the 5 years because we can catch up and see where we're at or like what you said. Down the road, it'd be interesting, right? And then we can play it back. This is what I think 5 years from now and then see where you're at.
Yeah.
Just to catch up. But other than that, man, have a good day. Have a good rest
Thank
of the week.
Thank you. Can you end this with a yabo sale with me? Like, yabo sale.
How do you say it? Yabo sale?
Yabo sale. Yabo sale? Hey, man. Yeah. All right. 1, 2, 3. We out, yo.
Yabba Sale.